This is the story of a great river and the city through whose heart it flows. It's also the story of a group of men, survivors of a once great industry based on that river. The survivors are the watermen, the river is the Thames, and the city, of course, is London.
You turned at the dock gate, you was a boy, and when you got the other side, you became a man. You were expected to do a day's work.
You travelled, you got to know the area, and it was all different cargoes, you met different guys.
God forbid if you had some affliction, that stuck with you, whatever your affliction was, you got a nickname for it, and you just had to suffer it.
I'm Jean Di Marino, and in this story you'll hear from the men who practised a trade that is centuries old, the watermen of the River Thames in London. Ever since the English capital was established, there've been watermen carrying goods and passengers on its mighty watercourse. But in recent years, their numbers have declined drastically.
We used to do guides on the Thames, and you're forever laughed and saying, over there used to be. Where that block of flats is, there used to be, and I can still see it as it was. Every time I close my eyes of a night and have a dream, it's all about how the river was. It's not ever about how it is.
I went to a wharf in 1964, brand new, spanking new wharf. It was out of date the day they opened the door, because they couldn't handle the next generation of containers.
We was pressing and telling the government, the officials, why? Why not use this River Thames? Germany are using their rivers, Amsterdam, Belgium, everyone else bar us. No.
You still see the old entrances to the docks, and there's the stairs, you know, like Wapping Stairs and all that. They're still there, but you've got to look for them, and it's just not the same.
They're a tough lot, the watermen. They come mostly from the same families who lived around here in East London. Their skills have been passed down to them from father to son for generations. They're survivors, duckers and divers, as they call themselves. But their way of life is passing into history. Coming up, you'll hear how it once was, how they lived, laughed and worked. But the story begins much, much earlier.
This is the original start of the Georgian Hall. These benches here are 1800, and years gone by, watermen would have come up to pay their fees, fines, licences, sat on those benches and be called into what was then the clerk's office, which is through here.
On a quiet street in the city of London stands the headquarters of an ancient guild, the Worshipful Company of Watermen and Lightermen. For centuries, its members have been responsible for the movement of passengers and goods on the River Thames. I'm taking a tour of Waterman's Hall. Carol Ratcliffe, the assistant clerk, is my guide.
And that's a wherry.
Rather like a large rowing boat.
And it would have been rowed by a waterman and his apprentice.
Can you describe that for me? So what does it look like?
Pointed rowing boat, I would suggest it looks like, with a sort of flattish bottom at the sides. I'm not a technical person when it comes to boats, so...
So this wherry was what the watermen used to...
It's a taxi,
people.
Water taxi, quite simple as that.
Theirs was a hard and often dangerous life. Navigating the tides and fierce currents of the Thames was not for the faint-hearted, and competition for customers was tough. Renowned for their caustic tongues, the watermen weren't always the most ethical of men.
You would go to the side of the River Thames and you would shout out, "Waterman hoy," to attract the attention of your watermen. Now, one of the, and it breaks my heart to tell you this, but one of the biggest tricks the watermen would play in those days were halfway across your journey, ka-ching, the fares would go up. So you either paid up or you swam.
There were numerous attempts to impose order on the trade. In 1514, an Act of Parliament was passed, by royal assent from Henry VIII, standardising the fares charged by the watermen.
We're going to go upstairs to the courtroom. It's a cantilever staircase.
Another act in 1555 led to the foundation of the Company of Watermen and mandated apprenticeships on the river.
This is the courtroom. Initially, Henry VIII got really fed up with people complaining about watermen and put together a group of the six most responsible watermen to govern the affairs of the company, called the rulers. So that was the very beginning of the company as we know it today. And then in 1827, we were given the right of self-determination, i.e. we could appoint our own people to govern the company. Now, we are not a livery company, we are a working guild. And that's something that we're really, really proud of. We don't have a say in the election of the Lord Mayor of London or the Aldermen, but we are treated as a livery company by the other liveries, so we are part of the group, if you like. But we quite like being that little bit unique.
Over the centuries, the Watermen have rowed themselves into a place in English society.
The Watermen rowed King John to sign the Magna Carta, and it's always been the tradition when the monarch is on the river, he or she has watermen with her. And they eventually became known as the Royal Watermen. They're also responsible for taking the crown jewels from the Tower of London for the state opening of Parliament, albeit they now have a security company with them. Shall we move to the Freemen's Room?
Over time, the Watermen's fortunes have risen and fallen. In the 1500s, there were reportedly thousands on the river, carrying locals to work, audiences to theatres, and merchants to boats moored downstream. There was only one bridge crossing the tidal river in London until the 1700s, when even the powerful Watermen's Hall couldn't prevent more being built, causing the work to decline. But with the building of the docks in the 1800s, barge drivers, or lightermen as they were called, were in demand. Every day, the rising tide brought ships from around the world to the English capital. River workers swarmed over them like ants, extracting their cargoes of food, timber and machinery, and rowed them on barges to the wharves lining the Thames. By the late 1950s, there were tens of thousands of men and women working on the river. More than 5,000 were members of the Watermen, Lightermen, Tugmen and Bargemen's Union. But today, there are a fraction of that. The men and the river on which they worked have grown quiet. The machinery has been dismantled. And the docks filled in.
Welcome aboard the Salient for the 500th anniversary coat.
It's empty. Look at it. I mean, you can see for yourself it's empty.
The survivors, like John Elliston, stubbornly cling to their memories.
This river in the 50s, 60s and 70s was buzzing. There was shipping, there was little coasters, there were tugs, there was barges, and it's a chunker. All you see is buildings now where walls were. It's basically an estate agent's area.
Watermen's Hall has organised a cruise for those who lived through the downturn. The men and their wives line the rail of the passenger launch. Looking out at the shore, they marvel at the changes time has brought to the Thames. Large tracts of the area where they once lived and worked have been redeveloped. Luxury apartments and offices now occupy the docks and wharves where the ships unloaded.
It's as if someone's come along and just swept it all clean, isn't it?
Terry Carver.
I mean, here, they used to do the cocoa butter and Bob Coombs. Do you remember Bob Coombs always whistling?
Now, I can go on that river, and I've been on that river, and I don't know where I am now.
Eddie Chamberlain.
I look at places and I think, what was here? Because they're now luxury flats. Yeah. You still see the old entrances to the docks, and there's the stairs, you know, like walking stairs and all that. They're still there, but you've got to look for them, and it's just not the same.
Many of the retired watermen live at almshouses in Hastings. Each weekend, they gather to remember and swap stories.
And then my dad, we got on our bikes, and we rode our bikes down to London Dock. I'm about 15, I was ever so skinny. And there's these dockers with these barrels of sherry and that, and there's barrels of wool, and the work that was going on, the barges were packed in this dock with ships either side. That was my first experience. All this going on, the cranes moving, it was amazing, you know, this life.
Eddie Chamberlain spent 22 years on the river as a lighterman, moving freight along the Thames. A real raconteur, despite suffering shortness of breath, he's the first to tell his tale.
When I was first apprenticed on a river in 1953, my father was me master, he had your master apprenticeship. And before I went to Watermen's Hall, he had to take me up there and stood before all these craft owners, and they decided whether you could be your father apprenticeship. And a lot of the lighter offices were in the City of London. And he took me to one where he thought I would learn my work best, and it was a company called Field & Hickman. And the boss there was the Duke. And he said, come here, young Shane. And my dad said, I want him to come and work. He said, let me have a look at him. And he felt me like that. He said, he wants feeding up, I'd kill him. He said, he's no good to me. He said, take him round to Orient Lightery. That was another office in the city. He said, old Bob Pereira's would give him a job. And that's where I went. They took me on. And that was the sort of ways it was in them days.
You turned at the dock gate, you was a boy. And when you got the other side, you became a man. and that was exactly it. He was expected to do a day's work.
Terry Carver left school at 14 to begin his apprenticeship. On the river, he went by the name of Todd.
My family river name was Todd Carver because my father was Todd Carver, and so old Joe was Todd Carver, and so it merrily went through. The first job that the apprentices had to do was operate the switchboard. Then we were used as runners to take paperwork to the various docks, which gave us the direction and the geography of the job that we were going to apprentice to. I was sent to the old London dock. And that's where I met some of the real characters and people that, if you had to describe the people as I sort of saw them through my eyes, they were comics, poets, advisors. But above all else, they were teaching you your job. But I mean, covering craft with tarpaulins, hatchwork, rowing craft about. And it was a very physical job, actually. I mean, it was work, believe you me. There was a special way, for example, of fitting hatches. So if you did it wrong, they all fell down the hold. And if you were on your own, you had to get them up again on your own, climbing down the side of ships on Jacob's ladders. You know, there's a special way to do that as well, but it's not something that would come into your head immediately. Learning the different uses of the ropes, you know, the different knots and hitches and things like that, became such a natural part of you that if somebody said, oh, well, why, or explain it, that's it. It's a little bit like putting your shoes on. You don't forget that, do you?
One day you was at Brentford, and the next day you could be at Tilbury.
John Elliston left school at 15 to begin his five-year apprenticeship. He spent 26 years driving barges full of cargo on the river.
So you travelled, you got to know the area, and it was all different cargoes. You met different guys and the characters, not only lightermen, but stevie doors, dockers, OSTs. They were tally clerks, OSTs, but we used to call them old stage turns. They was the one who'd either done measuring up the cargo for the dockers, and they was paid by measurement, or they was paid by tonnage. You tow these craft up. These are two filter tank barges. They've got petrol or diesel or whatever. Now, you towed them up to a certain destination. You had a crew, three or four on the tug, and then, of course, you had one lighterman each barge. The skipper was in charge of the tug, and you was in charge of your barge. But he basically overruled you. Whatever he said, go. If he wanted to make the tow up his way, then it had to be that way. Because if you was towing up a canal behind a barge, it was about twice as wide as this room. So you had a barge one side with timber unloading, and you might have a barge the other side. Now, that barge in the middle, that canal craft, had to be made straight. So she wouldn't be in collision with either side of the wharf or the canal or the barges that was alongside being discharged or loading or whatever.
The lighter's trade was quite a skilled trade because not only did you have to know all this paperwork, you had to deal with the customs, you had to find your own cargo, like where it was placed in a hold and sorted out with the ship's clerk and everything.
Alan Jennings spent 50 years on the river in a wide range of jobs. He drove barges, piloted tugs and crewed a ferry. It was all skilled work, he notes.
Sometimes you'd have two gangs of dockers in the barge loading, and I just really more or less want to put the stuff in on the quick, but you want the stuff all stowed because nevertheless it's a barge and it's got to sit right, float right, and it's got to go to places. You're responsible through your firm to the person who's buying that stuff to see that it's delivered in a proper manner, you know. So now you imagine you're a young freeman, 19, 20, whatever, 21, standing on the deck and you've got eight hairy ass dockers there wanting to do their own thing, and you're going to tell them not to do that. That you say, no, don't do it that way, do it this way. And they go, no, you'll be all right, boy. And then you've got to argue with them and you've got to front them out. And the next thing you say, well, look, you either do it my way or we stop the job. And that's one thing, we'd stop the ship and that's it.
Fire, fire, fire down below. It's fetch a bucket of water, girls, it's fire down below.
Still, Terry Carver says the watermen enjoyed their jobs. A great sense of camaraderie imbued the trade.
Once you got on the river, you became somebody's nickname.
Oh, yeah.
Because whatever characteristic you may have, Whispering Smith, yeah. Tanky Smith, Twinkle Toes, I mean, yeah, Patsy Fagan, Twinkle Toes, he fell over more times than he ever walked upright.
Our particular firm had a load of Smiths working for us, and to distinguish between them, they all had nicknames, which they all accepted.
Alan Jennings.
There was Houseboat, yeah. Because he had a boat up the creek. cabin cruiser he used to go on, so they called him Houseboat. His son, when he came afloat, used to do a little bit of scrapping, so he was called Boxer, the son of Houseboat. And God forbid if you had some affliction, because that didn't make no difference in the dock. That stuck with you, whatever your affliction was, you got a nickname for it, and you just had to suffer it. And that was it.
Their sense of humour helped them make light of the difficult work.
We had a bloke in Limited. His name was Arthur Beadle, but he was called Lucky Look because Arthur Beadle, he'd had an accident at some time. He'd lost that part of his hand. So when he pointed, he had a huge long finger. And I don't make this up. He would point at something and say, I can see that's going to break down. And it would break down. And they called him Lucky Look because whatever he looked at and pointed at, it went wrong. So they say, oh, who was with today? Lucky Look.
And as Eddie Chamberlain points out, the sense of fellowship extended outside of the workplace.
There always was a pub nearby. You'd go to that pub and there all the other blokes whose barges were outside there would be in there. And so you'd have a real laugh. It's
Eddie, Terry, John and Alan carried out a trade that had endured for hundreds of years. But during their lifetimes, everything changed. What happened? You'll find out next in Rogues and Vagabonds, the Watermen of the River Thames. I'm Jean Di Marino. We'll be back in a moment.
Fire up aloft, boys, fire down below. Douse it up with water, girls, and let's roll and go.